Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
G'day everyone, and welcome once again to the Super Footy Podcast. Yes, four rounds down, and the plot thickens in AFL footy. John Anderson joins us as our special guest panelist this week. We've given Nick the flick. Welcome, Ando.
G'day, Cutter.
Peter Vetter is away. Lauren Wood, you are away today, but you have come in for the Super Footy Podcast. That is showing amazing dedication.
Dedication, that's exactly right. And with Mick not here, little Tiger talk as possible, please.
Yeah, well, I don't think we have any problems here with Ando and I, both with our Geelong scarves on. But Ando, before we get into the footy, you had a fantastic family moment on the weekend. Tell us about that.
I went down to Central Park, Hutto and Store. Have you been, well, you've called Store Gift?
No, I haven't. No.
Well, that's one of the few things you haven't done in your calling career. Well, Peter Donegan, of course, owns it.
He's the doyen.
Went down there on Friday, got two boys who run, Lauren, Jack and Sam, 20-year-old and 19-year-old. And one of them, well, one ran second in a 550 on a Sunday. Sam ran third in a 1600. And Jack won a 400 open yesterday at the Backmarkers by about an inch, I think, from.
Fantastic.
It was the runner, Tancredi, who's sort of staggering over the line in the pink and got him on the line. So it was a very proud moment as a parent. But for him, and he went a bit of money too, about $2,500. So,
wow.
And he said to his girlfriend later on last night after imbibing a little bit, do you think we'll be able to buy a house with that money?
Oh,
he can probably buy a wheel of a JK Caravan. I don't think so. Anyway.
It probably would have been a point in time where winning a race at Store might have got you a deposit on a house, wouldn't it?
Well, $40,000 to Liv Ryan in the women's. She got the money, and Matthew Rizzo in the men's. So that's a serious money, isn't it, when you win 40?
Exactly.
So I have to get Jack to become a sprinter next year, Lauren.
I think so. Yeah. I think that's where the money might be. But it sounds like it was a great weekend. I tend to watch it on the telly every Easter Monday. And
it's one of those things like really the Warrnambool 3-day racing carnival that you kind of need to do. And I'm 60 and I've never done Store. I've been to Store, but never stayed up there for the duration. And we're already booking for next year.
Yeah, fantastic. It does remind me, though, of an ex-footballer who will remain nameless. Just said, where do they run the Store Gift?
I could hazard a few guesses. I've got a few candidates.
Let's talk about yesterday. We have to, and everyone is talking about it, and that is the Hawks. And I sort of cautioned last week. I said, let's give them a bit more time and see if they can respond, because I think 3 weeks is too quickly. But probably 4 weeks, we've probably after 286-point losses, we've seen enough. I'm sure they'll get better, but it looks as if it's going to be very tough from here. And the question is, what do they do from here?
I think, Lauren, with games like that, you say, okay, we've got Burgoyne's older and Hodgie's older. Now, Hodgie played a pretty good game yesterday, and obviously Josh Gibson is feeling the pinch a bit, and there's a transition, but it's actually worse than that because what is going on, I would speak to players who have played against them this year, and you hear talk of, you used to run into the Hawthorne forward line on your way back and you'd get whacked with an elbow to the guts and you get, you know, just a punch and a push and all the rest of it. We're not very sociable at all. And that's not happening anymore. They're a lot quieter on the ground. That's been noticed. I've spoken to two players from rival club who made that comment. They said they're most un-Hawthorne-like.
That was definitely one thing I noticed at the ground yesterday. There was that 10-minute period at the start of the third quarter where they had that will back a little bit. There was a little bit of jumper punching, as you said, that unsociable, you know, the unsociable Hawks that we came to know from a few years ago. But we said here a few weeks ago that we couldn't write them off and they were still potentially a finals chance. But after yesterday, I think, you know, they only lost the two players in Sam Mitchell and Jordan Lewis, but they were two players that just made other players so much better.
No doubt.
You know, the guys that were around them, the Liam Shields, the Isaac Smiths, those sort of guys in the middle in particular, that they were just made to be so much better. And that's what great players do.
They've never had to have a leading role, those guys, have they?
Never.
And now they do. And the other point I'll make about it is, how many actual midfielders have they got? Most teams have, you know, 6, 8 midfielders. previously they had Sam Mitchell and Jordan Lewis. Well, they're gone. Now, they brought in Tom Mitchell and Jago Mira. That's fine. They are genuine midfielders. Liam Shields is sort of a wingman come midfielder. Isaac Smith's definitely a wingman rather than a genuine midfielder. I'm struggling to come up with other names that are actual mids. And, I mean, it's credit to Clarko. They've never had a huge depth in that area because they've played a different way, haven't they? They've played with their kicking game, and that's he's played to their strengths and their classy half forwards that come up the ground and the defenders that win the ball and then keep it off everyone else. But you can't play that way unless you've got exceptional players elsewhere, and they no longer have them.
No, and those players like Luke Bruce is a good example, Piopolo, Gunston, they were very good players in great sides. What are they like in an average side? And I saw it with Carlton players in the 80s. A lot of them went to St Kilda. Mm. And they were good players. I mean, talk about McConville comes to mind. Yeah. Kenny Sheldon went there. Ricky Nixon went there. Yeah. There's quite a few of them. And Jones, they'd say they probably weren't, most of those weren't as good a player at a weaker club. Mm. Gary Ablett, that's a testament to his greatness that he went from Geelong to Gold Coast and became an even better player.
An exception to the rule, really.
But the Hawthorn players aren't doing that at the moment.
And don't know what to do when it does happen. That, as you say, they were an average side yesterday, whether that remains to be seen, and have been for the last 2 weeks. But Hawthorn have years gone by, even when, as I said then, the 10 minutes in the third quarter, when it looked like they could potentially get themselves back into the game. We used to say, hang on a minute, this is Hawthorn. At any moment, they're going to say, we're going to win this game now. And they would. Yesterday, they just didn't know what to do. And then we saw the Cats run over them in the last.
We've lauded Graham Wright and his list management correctly.
Absolutely.
Because they won
Brilliant.
At least three premierships in Graham Wright's time. But with the young players, when you can't get into the draft early, and I'm saying before, say, pick 25, pick 30, pick even later for Hawthorn, you've got to pluck one. Taylor Giray probably looked like that type of player, but this year hasn't been as good. So you go to Geelong and you look at who they played yesterday, and I use them as an example. Brandon Parfitt, you think is going to be a player. He's walked straight into a side and played four games, and two of them very good. Parsons yesterday
looks
like being a player. So you find a couple of young ones, and you think that really gives you a buzz, and it's infectious to the players in the side because it increases the depth. Hartung to date hasn't been that player. O'Rourke certainly hasn't been that player. He's still playing. He played yesterday on the weekend for Box Hill. Played well. He might come back in, but he's sort of at his last year, I would have thought.
Yep.
Sicily maybe there. Howe,
showed
Brandt.
Showed a bit yesterday, Sicily. He can mark.
Yep. His ground play doesn't match his marking.
No.
They just have to pluck one or two younger players, and that just gives you – Carlton have found – Yeah, look, Pickett looks like he might be a player on the weekend.
Yeah, well, Pickett was a very high draft pick.
Of course.
And they've gone a different way with getting those...
And Marchbank the same way.
GWS players. But you're right, and I think the Dogs showed us last year, didn't they? I mean, if you can... Yes, they got the Bont and Stringer and some of those really hot... And a couple of father sons are very handy, but they supplemented that with players at pick 30 and 40. And you need... You say one or two, I'd probably even say two or three need if you're going to rejuvenate. And, you know, I guess Geelong have had a few exceptional... a bit of luck in with Dangerfield, exceptional circumstances. But really, they've stayed up and stayed competitive, haven't they? And they just had that one year where they dipped down and they're back in top four again last year. And, you know, the question is, I mean, we'll get onto them in a minute. I'm not still fully convinced on them, but you have to respect and admire what they've been able to do.
If you're a Hawthorn supporter, we all know quite a few. The ones I know fervently hope they finish last or second last. Because there's no point in finishing 11th or 12th for Hawthorn.
See, the interesting thing there is, though...
There's no point in finishing last, either, is there?
St Kilda get their pick.
Oh, sorry. They've given their pick up.
I heard a few Hawthorn fans say that yesterday, too.
It still gets them into the draft earlier. Later.
It does.
But not where you want to be when you're finishing.
Well, I think their first pick is GWS's second pick, which could be somewhere between 36 and 40, depending on where they finish.
No, it will be. I think they'll be up there.
So...
I think there were a lot of people smiling yesterday, but Saints fans in particular.
There's this whole group of St Kilda, picture if you will, everyone. There's this whole group. There's a group of supporters pretty much for every club in the media, and you always notice them sort of hustling together when you go out for a cup of tea at half time. There's always St Kilda's been pretty well represented in the media. Yesterday, I think there was Bruce Beaver. Ross Flegeltorp, who's the executive producer at SEN. He's mad.
Was Russell Holmesby there?
Russell usually there, wasn't there yesterday. I didn't notice anyone else, but there's always three or four of them. And, you couldn't get the smile off their face at half time. at three-quarter time. And
excuse my ignorance. I entirely forgot about that. That's a massive thing, isn't it?
I often forget it. And then after a game like yesterday, you see, as you said, the Saints fans popping up on Twitter and the rest of it saying, hang on a minute, we're over here and we'll be getting pick one if they finish on the bottom. So Saints I think fans. It's going to sort of keep ebbing and flowing throughout the year. We'll all forget and then be reminded.
They've got two teams to bury for each weekend. Their own team, and then they're going to play Hawthorne.
So hopefully they can get pick one and about pick 15 or 16 or even higher.
Well, it's going to be interesting, and it's probably a topic for later, but what should St Kilda do with that? And it probably depends on where they finish and who the players are and all that sort of stuff, but whether they bundle them together in an effort to get a superstar from another club like a Nat Fyfe, or whether they just take the young picks and do it that way.
I predict now, Hutto, it'll depend on how Paddy McCartan plays for the rest of the year. Because if Paddy stands up and becomes the player they hope he becomes, they may look to trade for that deal. If not, and that's a draft where you've got two or three really good tall key position kids, unlike last year where it was all about midfielder, I reckon they'll use it to get a tall, because that's what they went for. People say McCartan or Petrarca, but it wasn't really that. It was more different types of players.
Exactly. Mm. What did they need?
Yeah, they would need. That's right. Mm. I think they've been unfairly criticised for that. And I wouldn't write McCartan off yet. But.
No, I wouldn't either. But it is interesting talking to some people about that decision. And I think at one stage they were definitely going to go Petrarca.
Petrarca, yep.
And changed their mind and went with McCartan. And I think the Tom Boyd thing was lurking around at the time as well in people's minds to say, well, look what the Bulldogs had to give up to get a gun key four. Well, we've got a chance to get one. And you certainly say that I think the Bontsman is the sort of player. If you could get someone like that at pick four, you'd be laughing. But, you know, three clubs overlooked him, didn't they? So it wasn't – it's not easy. And they've obviously had that Billings in that draft where they chose ahead of Bontempelli. So you can revise any draft, and it's much easier two or three years down the track. But there were certainly some people who had the strong view at the time that Petrarca was the better pick, but then the structural stuff comes into it.
Yeah. Oh, it may be Cochin was going to be a better player than Cruiser, but Carlton wanted the ruckman.
Mm.
And Cruiser was an unbelievably good player at that age, and has been a good AFL footballer.
And if he hadn't have got injured, you know, he may have been better than what he has.
Yep.
But, look, you can talk forever, can't you?
Oh, yeah. Takes you all the way back to the poor Richard Tambling.
Yes. What about Clarko? What about his response post-match and from here? What do we make of it all, and what does he do?
He took over as coach in 2005. I reckon they won five games that year. But he's under more pressure now than he was then, because then he was taking over a bit of a basket case. And it was all about development. They had young players from that 2004 draft in Roughhead, Lewis and Franklin. He hasn't got that now. So this is his greatest test as a coach,
no doubt. Yep.
And if he can reinvent Hawthorn in 2-3 years' time, he goes down in the annals as great as any coach that's been in the game. Has to be. And I wouldn't put it past him either.
No, I wouldn't put it past him either. But if things are as dire as what they appear to be, now, obviously a fair bit's got to do with how good O'Meara.
I don't know how good O'Meara is.
No.
The people who are better judges than me say that he is a wonderful player based on what they saw at the Gold Coast. You called him a bit of the Gold Coast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember Tim Watson said he thinks he could be, before he got injured, he could become the best midfielder of all time.
Well, Tim says that, you stand up and listen.
Mm, but he's not super fast.
Yep.
But he is, he's pretty much everything else. But, we don't know how much impact that knee is going to have on him. I remember Joel Selwood didn't get drafted higher than he did because of a worry about his knee. So it turned out all right.
With Mitchell, Hawthorn people say, Peter Swab, he'd been the best three or four players he's ever seen at Hawthorn. I think as time goes on, he gets higher.
Mm.
They just realise just how good Sam Mitchell has been or was at Hawthorn.
Tom Mitchell's the other one.
Very good player.
Yeah, but I was surprised that Sydney seemed not happy to give him up, but they certainly weren't going to budge.
Yep.
They knew they had Heaney and Mills coming through and liked some of their other young players. They weren't going to budge.
Well, he played in the State League for such a long time, didn't he?
But he came through and was a high possession player, an important part of their midfield. But I thought, gee, I don't reckon you want to lose a player like that. And you could argue that they've suffered from him going. I think they have. But he's struggling at Hawthorn, not to get the ball. He's getting the ball plenty, but he's not a great user. So he needs other players around him.
Well, Sydney last year was Kennedy. Parker, Hanbury, Mitchell and Jack.
Mm.
Now it's Kennedy, Parker, Hanbury. No Mitchell, and Jack's playing terribly. Yeah.
Heaney's crook.
And he's crook, of course. Yeah. And Mills, but he hasn't quite gone there yet, but he will. I just think Mitchell, you can't replace Sam Mitchell. And I don't think you can replace Jordan Lewis off the field in terms of what he brought to the club. And he is just, you know, Jordan Lewis. I don't know if you know him at all, Lauren. But he's a very likeable person. And he's a real man's man, I guess, Jordy. He's just a sort of bloke that you gravitate towards. And I think other than his errant fist recently, Melbourne's made a great pickup. Although we'll talk about that
soon. We will talk about that because, that will be my Beacon rewind. It's a pretty obvious one, but I think it cost them victory on the weekend. Certainly no Hogan cost them, and you could argue Lewis as well.
And definitely the Geelong game. I watched that game. If those two play, they win that game, no doubt at all.
Yeah.
And Geelong should have been 8 goals down at 3/4 time, and they would have been more down if Hogan and Lewis were playing.
Just why don't we get on to that in a moment, but what about Clarko from a media point of view, Lauren? How do you think because I find this fascinating because he has basically treated the media, I wouldn't say with contempt, I'd be pretty close to that over the time, but it hasn't mattered because they've won and winning cures all ills. And so it's going to be a challenge for – he got a bit feisty last night and maybe it wasn't the best worded question ever, but it was – the sentiment of the question was reasonable. So it is going to be interesting to see how he handles it from here. And because you talked about the depth of his challenge. If it is that the older players are pretty much close to gone and the next rung of players are only okay and then the young ones coming through are nothing amazing, which is sort of what it appears right now, then it's going to take some time.
Well, Lauren does the press conferences. You deal with all the coaches. I don't go to the after-match press conferences these days. Where does Clarkson rate for you in terms of fear factor, where you think you might get a snap back?
A game like that?
Well, any
fear factor would be high, I would imagine, for all the journos in there. Yeah. And he made them wait last night too. It was quite
a long time.
Yeah, so Chris Scott got his out of the way quickly. Obviously had to get to AFL 360s on there on a Monday night. And I stuck my head in just to see where things were at, obviously getting in touch with our desk here just to make sure everything's running smoothly after the game. So I stuck my head in just to see where Clarko was, and the Hawthorn banner was up and the Hawthorn staff were all in there. And it would have been another probably 35 minutes before he kicked off. So
that's unforgivable. I'll tell you why. They have an obligation. If that story has to go in a paper or get on a website or whatever, his quotes, and he has to be meant to be there at a certain time, that the AFL should come in and say, not good enough. We're going to fine you until you get there.
I don't know. Is there a time limit?
Yes, there is a time limit. So I reckon you can call Patrick Kane
and find out
whether he's been fined or not.
But he was different when he did come in. Obviously, they've had the 3 losses previously, and he still had the belief, and he still said, no, we don't listen to the noise. What we are doing here is what we believe in, and we think it works. Whereas last night, he was admitting maybe he had to have a look at himself, maybe he had too much belief in his team, and maybe he had to reassess the way that he was dealing with his players and the way that they were approaching things, which I typically haven't seen or heard from Clarkson over the last few years. He's always backed his system. We're in our four walls. He's very much one of those coaches that if you're in here, you're in here. If you're out there, you're very much out there. So
he had to, though, last night, didn't he?
Absolutely. 286 points. I don't think you can back away from that.
No. I mean, really, Jeff Kennett's been the only voice of dissension at all along the way at Hawthorn, hasn't he, even when he was in the club?
He wanted to drop Clarkson to the reserve before he coached 3 premierships. That was interesting. That's my favourite comments ever.
I think it is.
From Jeff Kennett. Yeah. He's got to find form back on the resis.
Yeah. And they went on to win the flag that year.
Yeah, that's right.
But and even this morning on SEN, Kennett's talked about, and he was fully supportive of Clarko, but he's a big believer, Jeff, in length of tenure, and that 6 to 9 years is as long as you should have as a leader. We spoke to Sheeds on Saturday about that topic, and he was very much, obviously he's the one bloke who has done it probably, along with Mick Malthouse to a degree. But it's a massive challenge to go up top of the mountain, back down the mountain, and then with the same club, usually not the same group, to go back up again. And it's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, as I said before, if someone can do it, it's Alistair Clarkson. He's a chance. But right now, you couldn't see it happening.
Just as we finish off on the Hawks then, where do they finish this year?
I think there's no reason to suggest they'll finish above 12th, so I'd say 13th, 14th.
Okay.
In a comp that is even. I thought it wouldn't be as even as it is because I thought Carlton and Brisbane would be just total easy beats, and they're not total easy beats, and they can win a given game on a given day. So I'm not sure Hawthorn is going to win more than 7 or 8 games the way they're tracking at the moment.
I still think they'll get together at some stage during the year and might win I don't think they'll make the eight, but I think they'll string some games together. But it won't necessarily, it could be a false dawn, you know. I mean, it may not mean too much. What do you reckon, Lauren?
And Eagles next week too. There's no easy ones from here on in, and that certainly isn't one, even though it's over here in Melbourne, obviously presents a little bit of a different challenge. But, yeah, interesting to hear, from our friends at TAB this morning, that there was a punter back in January that backed Hawthorn at $101
for the spoon
for the least amount of losses this
right.
year. And, I don't know about you guys,
but amount of wins,
at least amount of wins, sorry, most amount of losses. Back in January, I never could have seen that coming. So I don't think it'll be a collect for them. As you said, I think they will get it together at some point. And yeah, I reckon about that 14th mark will be it.
All right. Let's do our Bitcoin rewinds then, if we've got one. And I mentioned mine before and we've touched on it, but the Melbourne, it's diabolical for them to have not had Jesse Hogan and Jordan Lewis, and obviously compounded by the injury to Maxi Gawn. Melbourne could easily be four wins and unbeaten. It's a different outlook now.
And looking at top four now,
and Richmond this
those
week.
Two games could be the difference between top four, top eight, finals. I mean, it's, how often do you see two players in a game punch these days? You know, most players don't do it in a career these days.
No.
They actually punch someone in the face. So it's extremely rare. I think, I don't know Simon Goodwin, so I don't know how, privately how he would have dealt with it. But personally, I would be so, so angry with those two blokes,
yeah.
what they did. And it's a, particularly, I'd say Jordan Lewis more so than Jesse Hogan, because he's the experienced player.
Yeah.
And he plays on the edge.
He does.
I understand all that.
I sort of said, I said yesterday to a few people off air that I sort of feel, not feel sorry for him. I feel like he was a bit unlucky in a way, but because it was, you know, he was sort of face to face, you know, pushing around. And I think from what I hear, he sort of said, you know, oh, don't hit him, don't hit him. Oops, I hit him. He didn't kind of mean it, but he did it. And his record, he would have only got two if it wasn't for his bad record. And obviously the two Carlton players played, which made it more frustrating for the penalty. And someone raised the point about, I can't remember who, but I heard someone raise the point about, should, if the player's injury doesn't turn out to be as bad as what it appeared at the time, should you be able to challenge the suspension?
Well, probably because we thought Cripps with a broken jaw was going to miss a bit of football.
At least a week.
And he hasn't. And what Parsons did to Hodge yesterday was potentially every bit as damaging.
Yep.
But Hodge is a tough guy with a tough jaw who didn't break it. So Parsons, maybe, I don't know what he'll get, but maybe 1 week. Two to one.
Yeah, I would have thought so. One or two. So Bitcoin, we're still, as we recall, we're still waiting on that.
Bitcoin rewind for me would be Collingwood's recruiting. In hindsight, and this goes back 2-3 years, they've concentrated so much on the midfield. Well, they've added, even drafted, so they had Jordan Ngoi was a very early pick, 4 or 5 from memory, Geordie.
Yep.
Daniel Wells comes in. Levi Greenwood comes in. Jack Crisp comes in. Help me, Taylor Adams comes in. Adam Treloar comes in. It goes on and on. And then look, it is very impressive. And Travis Farco comes in. They're very impressive names and numbers. And they're getting the ball. Perhaps not using it as well as they should be. But there's nothing. They've recruited up forward. Darcy Moore's, I like, you know, he's an exciting young player and will be a good player, but he needs someone to play off.
Yeah, he's not a number one forward, is he?
He needs, even the, it doesn't have to, the big body there just to take that pressure away from him, let him float. And then
he's a running, jumping player rather
exactly.
than
yeah.
a
yeah.
state of ground.
It's a, you know, Tom Hawkins would be good for him, at that type of player, who's a big, solid sort of target. Travis Clegg would be good for him in form.
Yeah.
But he's, I think it's asking a lot of Darcy Moore, and I think it's going to come back to bite them that they haven't gone for that type of player.
Mm. Well, while we're on the Pies, before you give us yours then, Lauren, what's our reading on Bucks?
Oh, well, they've parked him on Sunday again. I know they're playing on Anzac Day, but we spoke last week about the press conference out at the airport, and I notice on their weekly media alert they've parked his weekly presser on Sunday morning.
So just explain,
I believe.
Explain
so
to our listeners how that works.
Well, I don't know how it works, and I know it depends on the day that you play, but I would assume that you don't necessarily want a lot of people coming if you're having it on a Sunday morning.
Well,
there's
other matches on.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
That distracts,
just
and,
taking the attention
and
away.
And I think it's been interesting with Collingwood because Bucks has always been a midweek speaker. That's a change.
Yeah.
Clarko's never been a midweek speaker. He's always been
a
Saturday
weekend.
Morning. They're playing on Sunday or hide it away at the airport. Gary Pert didn't speak to the media until after they had a win, so he was available for the first time last weekend. the Collingwood St Kilda game. He did the pre-match on SEN. We'd been trying to get him for a few weeks, and so he does the pre-match after a win, which is just a smart business because there's obviously a lot of questions around Collingwood. They win, so he's fine. He comes on and talks, and you can deflect, but now they lose after the weekend, and Bucks is now hidden away on the weekend.
Gary Pert spoke again on the weekend, didn't he? I saw him
So that was the first time he's spoken? Pre-match.
A pre-match.
So coming off a win where you can, it's much easier to spin things. Well, spin's not even the right word, but to defend Bucks and we're turning things around and all that sort of stuff. So clubs do this. They plan these things very carefully.
Buckley's, what's his sixth year?
Yeah.
Has just been downwards all the way through. I would have thought his demeanour has been outstanding.
Magnificent.
I can't fault him on that at all. I don't know whether Nathan Buckley can coach or not. I'm not at Collingwood. We look from outside and make assumptions, and I understand that's what we're paid to do. Honestly, can't say whether he can coach or not. My suspicion is he's not a great coach. I base that on where they're travelling, how they're tracking. And it's gone from Nathan's first year was 2012. They finished fourth. 2013, they finished seventh, and it's been out of the final since then.
So, is that too simplistic, though?
Yeah, and look, I give them the injury excuse in two of those years where they're 8-3 at the halfway mark in two seasons and then got heavily hit. That's not the excuse right now, although they have had injuries this year. And Degoe's big loss. I mean, not even injuries with Gordon, half and half, and Daniel Wells and Elliott, obviously. But they still don't have the forward line targets. But I think Buckley's handled himself incredibly well.
He has. Interesting. This is the Be Kind Rewind segment. If Bucks had his time again, would he coach Collingwood or would he coach another club?
And he could have coached another club.
And he could have.
And a number of clubs, I would
say. I suspect he would if he had his time again. And he's passionate, obviously, about Collingwood. I totally understand. But I suspect he would have coached another club if he had his time again.
Well, when has it worked out when someone's totally passionate about a club that they go back and coach that club? John Worsfold at Eagles.
There's not many examples.
Not a lot of times.
There's value in going to another club at times. Well, seeing how they do things and eventually coming back to your home club.
Paul Roos, Sydney, did it.
Yeah.
He played there. I think it's a really good point, Heather, that he would have benefited probably from going somewhere else.
You mentioned Daniel Wells there too. He has to play Anzac Day, doesn't he?
Yes, bring him straight in.
Well, he's played a game.
Yeah.
He trained for 3 weeks beforehand. I think that would be...
Daniel Wells, Rolls-Royces don't play in the VFL too often anyway, do they? Mm. Put him on the MCG, let him get out in the wing and let him kick the ball because he's probably their best kick in the midfield. He and Pendlebury has, good skill execution, but Wells is a beautiful disposal, and that's what Darcy Moore would enjoy that.
Yeah, no, he would. So it's going to be big, isn't it, Anzac Day? It's going to be massive.
Yep.
Let's quickly talk about it I haven't let you off the hook yet for your Be Kind Rewind, but Essendon, the comments, or maybe these are, is this your Be Kind Rewind, the comments from John Worsfold or not?
It's not, but let's go with it.
It fits the category. The comments about them hitting the wall. To me, it looked like an honest comments from John, not spin. I'd be surprised if I was a spin maker that I would have advised him to say that.
Yeah, the players are letting them down to a large degree of those who didn't play last year. So Hurley has been poor to fair. Hook has been poor. Watson has a really good start. Hasn't been as good the
his
last
skills
couple of
haven't, years. I mean, he's never been a beautiful kick, but they haven't been as good this year.
Collier, not bad.
It's probably been the best.
Been the best of that crew. Heppel, by his standards, not as good.
Really good first week.
Yeah.
Brilliant first week.
Yeah.
I just don't think we saw it coming this soon. I was saying this to someone yesterday that I think we all knew it had come with Essendon and we all said that the lull would be there, but round four, I think he's gone a bit early, Woosha.
He knows. He's been
You're right.
For a while.
But to suggest that they're, a bit tired and flat and...
It is interesting, the whole thing of a coach, does it give the players an out now when he says that? Or is he trying to give them an out? Or is he just being honest? Ty Kennelly said something interesting recently that he found. Remember, he had that year off where he went home and came back. He came back, and the first couple of weeks he was up and about and it was great. And then he hit a flat spot for a while, and it took him probably to the mid season to get fully going again. So, whether that follows that same pattern. On the other hand, I think Jake Carlisle is playing, is looking better and better each week.
Yeah,
definitely.
But Melksham's struggling.
Paddy Ryder's been really good.
Paddy Ryder's been very
good. Missed the weekend through suspension, but before that was the best of them, I would have said.
But it's when it's six or seven of them, it's
Cremery's VFL.
So he's been a bit injured.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, what's your beacon rewind, Laura?
Mine's rules-based. Mine goes to the AFL. I think if they were to have their time again, they probably would have trialled the third man up rule potentially in the JLT series. Another weekend of it being at the forefront of discussion. Obviously, Good Friday, the standalone game, it had its controversy. And I sort of feel like I know they're going to review it after round six, but I don't think they're going to get rid of it at that point or change it.
Have they worked out the solution?
But it's every week now, isn't it?
Do you think they've worked out the solution now? Wow. Clearly, the umpires are being more demonstrative about who is the ruck.
The nominating. Yeah. It is you, and it is you.
It is you. It is. Yeah. Everyone says it is like under 12s, isn't it? Umpiring. Right now. You're in the ruck, and you're in the ruck.
Yeah. I've spoken to Peter Swab about it. He doesn't see the problem with it. So I can't see, from an umpire's perspective, that they want to change it. The umpires are okay with it, according to Swabby. So I think it will stay with us.
But when you do hear the umpire say that, and it does slow things down at the stoppage. I'm not sure that's a massive problem. Maybe it is, maybe it's not, but it is odd.
But for players, well, you used the Good Friday example before, that the players are so in the zone that, you know, Bont's not checking if Josh Dunkley is nominated.
No, but that's that's why now, it's since then, that they've done, they're making sure that everybody knows. So they have to.
That's probably the worst one I've seen. He didn't kick.
But we've had one a week, is what I mean.
He missed, didn't he? He did. Dunkley missed the shot.
Yeah. Yep.
In a close game, but, you know, that's going to happen, though, isn't it? Mm. So it's. I don't actually like it personally, but I'm not a ruckman.
That's true.
I don't have Mark Bissars jumping into me. You know, so.
Well, the ruckman that I've spoken to didn't really see it as a massive problem.
Most didn't.
I think most like it.
There was a few. Mm. There was one major injury, wasn't there, to, was it Leuenberger, I think?
Yep, Louis.
So
and Blitzarves, you just mentioned his name then. He was the most prolific of it last year, and I think he was a bit concerned. We spoke to him in Monday's paper about what it would mean for him, but he loves it. So I think it's interesting to hear players.
He loves it as a ruckman, or he loves it just...
He loves it because it's let him change his game. Now, he saw himself as the jumper last year, and he sort of thought when it got changed, he went to the coaches and sort of said, what do I do now? Mm. You know? Mm. But it's allowed him to completely change his game,
he's
which he really
well,
likes.
Isn't he? I don't want to get distracted on the Cats again, but I think he's playing better this year than last.
He had one game. Was it round one, maybe the Freo game? He was outstanding.
Yeah.
Weekend, I reckon he had one kick, or yesterday he had one kick and 15 handballs.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
but he wasn't bad.
Quite a few hit-outs. And...
Yeah, well, he's someone in the last quarter of a game when the big blokes are getting pretty tired. This bloke's still running and running away from people. He's a very valuable asset in that way.
All right, quickly through some of the other points from the weekend, and is it just me if you've got one, but going all the way back to Thursday night, West Coast and Sydney, why aren't we as worried about the Swans as we are about the Hawks? Is it because we can see the youth they have?
That game was really hot early on. I don't know if you watched it, Lauren, but Sydney brought a finals-like pressure, and the West Coast team thought that, and they were really happy with that, how they survived it and got through. They're not too far off the Swans. It's just about numbers, isn't it? And I think Heaney's not too far.
A couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah, he's massive.
Yeah, Dane Rampey will be back.
I see the player that I reckon they miss most, and I'm critical of him at times, is Kurt Tippett. This time last year he was flying. And until he got injured last year, he was fine, and so were the Swans. It just brings a different dimension, both ruck and forward, and takes pressure off Buddy. So much pressure off Buddy. So I think he's been the biggest loss for them. They don't make the finals for mine.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I'm still not going to put a line through them, but you're right. I mean, it's less likely than likely now.
Play GWS in the weekend.
Yeah.
Who have got serious injuries as well.
They have,
Which we forget about. Whitfield and Cornelio and Griffin and Deledio. Those blokes I just mentioned, I'm sorry to change the subject.
No, that's all right.
Deledio, pick one. Whitfield, pick one. Cornelio, pick two. It was the other one. Griffin, pick three. So that's first four players in the top three picks.
And Stevie J didn't play on the weekend either.
Stevie J.
Probably had their best quarter of the year so far.
Pick 22, Stevie J.
Yeah, not a bad player in his day. well, let's stay on that game then. I mean... Does that just remind us that...
The Battle of the Bridge.
Yeah. Well, the Port game, was that a reminder?
Oh, Port game, sorry. I thought you were talking about next week.
Well,
yeah.
we'll look ahead.
I think Port were okay.
Yeah, they were.
With Ryder out, and I think that makes a big difference to Port Adelaide with Ryder not there. So Port, to me, will make the finals. In fact, I feel pretty confident about Port Adelaide.
I didn't have them in initially, but...
They're playing even football. Even when they're not winning, they're in games. And they're in that game for a long time against a side who I think is clearly the best team in the competition ahead of Adelaide for mine.
People have always talked about 6 weeks as being about the time when the sample size is big enough. Do you think that still applies?
You're talking about GWS?
Just anyone, any team, to assess where that where a team's
well,
at.
I'm really confident that GWS is a really good side. Adelaide's a really good
Port
side.
Port Adelaide, I was more referring
Port Adelaide. Yeah, I'm happy with Port Adelaide, okay, with where they're at. I don't know what's been...
So if they make it, who else have you got in and out right now in a revised eight?
West Coast Eagles make it.
Yep.
And those, obviously, GWS and obviously Adelaide. Geelong's won four games, which is a pretty handy start.
Yep.
So they went even from now on, they make it easily. Yep. And Richmond fit in the same category. So I think it's fair to think those two sides make it. That's six teams, including Port Adelaide. After that, you can throw them up in the air and see where they land.
So you're saying the Tigers...
Western Bulldogs, sorry.
Yep. You're saying seven. The Tigers play finals?
Yep.
Excited?
It wouldn't be a Super Footy podcast without a bit of Tigers positivity, would it?
Richmond's really interesting. Damien Hardwick's there, and he's fighting for his coaching life. You've got Blake Carousella's come back in. Mm-hmm. He'll come into the club. Justin Lippage has come into the club. There's someone else I'm not mentioning here who's come in because all the assistants went. Well, there's a number of them, but it just seems to me they're medium talent players, if you like a Castagna, like a Sean Grigg, playing better football. I'd say they're a lot more even side.
They're playing to their personnel now, I think, finally. It just seems to be working. The way that they're using Jack, the way that they're using Dusty, it all seems to be making sense. And as you say, those middle tier guys have found their groove. They've been allowed to play on a bit more instinct, and it's clearly working.
I love it. I love the fact that they're doing well. Their supporters are so quiet by their standards because they roar like no one else.
Yeah, I heard someone saying on the weekend, I can't remember who it was, that this is the first year that we haven't heard noise out of Richmond.
We work with maniacs like
we do.
We do. Nick Warner.
They're all the lid is firmly on. They are adamant.
Remember 07, Ando? I mean, we... I was trying to keep the lid on all year myself. You act like you...
2007, because we barracked for Geelong. Round five, my youngest boy had a birthday. Susie drove down to Geelong to the cat shop, and she got there about 11:30 a.m. Monday morning. The woman said, "You're the only person who's been in here today." This is after round five, after North Melbourne beat us. We were 2-3, and no one else went to the shop all day. Susie bought all his gear. And then the next week, we played Richmond, won by 150 points.
Yeah, something like that.
And it turned around, yeah. So Richmond, the Tigers. Yeah, I hope Richmond make the finals. It'll be really good for the game.
Do you think they're like this? Because in previous years, it would be so Richmond do this. And then still miss the finals. So I feel like there's a lot of them that are sort of, let's not talk about it because it may still not happen. And until they're there, then they'll celebrate.
Al Payton walks in the office. You've seen him. He looks like sort of a combination of Jack Dyer and Charlie Callender, property shooter. He scarves, beanies, you know, black and yellow gold earrings. And he's just, and this year, nothing, none of that at all. I saw him before. Oh, no, you've got to enjoy it.
They're too stressed to enjoy it.
Yeah, I think they are.
It's like they're working for the media department. Yeah. Club,
Melbourne supporters went off after the first two rounds. Yeah. They were really up and about, weren't they?
They were. Talking about turning things around and the Melbourne game, but Ross Lyon, he's had a big couple of weeks, hasn't he?
Well, it's probably...
Probably just Harley Bennell hasn't helped him at the end.
I think there was something really significant on the weekend, and that win was Cam McCarthy's game.
Mm.
And when you see him suddenly get... He got 22, I think, and kicked two goals.
The most meters gained on the ground, I think.
That's massive. That's right. He was playing high quite a bit, which is, you'd think of him being more close to the goal. But he's a real player. And GWS obviously knew that and got pretty good, I think, two draft picks for him. Yeah. And high draft picks at that. But he was significant. Look, Balik looks a good player. Griffin Logue looks a really good player. So they're two kids. There was someone else playing the weekend. Hughes, I like the look of him.
Hughes.
Brady
Gray looks all right.
Yeah, he does. And you get Nat Fife back to near best.
Mm.
He's come back really well, hasn't he?
He's not a bad player.
He's all right. Yeah.
he has changed things a bit, hasn't he? He's using Mundy and Fife basically swapping as that key forward. Neil spent plenty of time forward.
Neil kicked four. Yep. Mundy kicked two or three.
Three, I think.
Yeah, so five. That's a pretty good response from them. Yeah. And he needs to find goals. He's got to invent goals, isn't he? Because with Pavlich.
Mm. He does. Yeah, no, he does. But I don't reckon the Blues, I think their first effort was, first half was very good, and they should have been ahead of the Gold Coast at halftime watching that game. But, yeah, they weren't great in the second half. But it's a terrific boost for Rocket, wasn't it?
Yeah, Rocket's an interesting one because I guess he's out of contract at the end of this year, and Tony Cochran, the president, has come out and made all sorts of comments about they'll play finals is where we meant to be, which were inexperienced and foolhardy comments, I thought,
I agree,
at the time. But just puts pressure on everybody at the club. And like Ross Lyon, they're almost identical, aren't they? Gold Coast lost their first two, same as Freo.
Everyone
and lost really badly. Who did they lose to? Brisbane first up, which they weren't expected to lose.
That's the one that, I mean, the next week hurt them because of how much they lost by it. But they're probably about where, you know, they wouldn't have expected to beat Hawthorn necessarily in round three, and they would have been hoping to beat Carlton, hoping to beat Brisbane. So they're probably about where they thought they'd be.
Yeah. I just worry about them. You mentioned Port before, as they're finally playing consistent footy. I feel like Gold Coast could be a bit like the old Port in that, you know, there's plenty of roller coasters on the Gold Coast, as we know, with all the theme parks, but that could be another one at the Suns. They're just so unpredictable.
They're two or three short in the midfield. And that's, obviously blokes have left, Ben Earl, O'Meara, and Prestia.
They do have a creative half-back line, though, don't they, when they get Saad up and running and Jack Martin and some of those guys.
Martin's finally starting to be the player we hoped he would become. Looking really exciting. And little Gary looked all right.
He did. He's not a bad little player. He could fit in pretty well down at Cadenia Park on the weekend. I'm not sure about that. What's your view on whether he gets there or not, Ando?
Yeah, he's going to Geelong.
I don't think Brian Cook is necessarily keen on that happening, definitively.
Interesting hearing him yesterday saying we won't be ringing him.
Yeah.
They can contact us.
He's got to come to Geelong at Geelong's price.
Correct. And he conceded yesterday there would be a pretty big pay cut.
There's also that everything that goes on.
Which I think we know.
That everything that goes on with having Ablett. And he referred to that yesterday. He said, I've been talking about stories about Ablett for 20 years or something, he said.
Mm.
And, I got the feeling that it's not a high priority for him.
Yeah. One weakness for Geelong is forward line. And Hawkins and Menzel have kicked 29 goals between them and been absolutely outstanding. But if one of those falls over, particularly the big bloke, but if Ablett's there, they've got a... And that's where he would play mainly.
Yep.
And then you say, right, well, you go on the ball and we'll put Dangerfield forward or Selwood or whatever. The Geelong is very open to the idea, Hutter. but it has to be done in a reasonable way. He will be 33.
Yep.
And it's not that easy.
Yeah, that's what I think Cook was sort of ramming home yesterday, in that it's got to work in a footy sense. We're not going to bring him back for marketing reasons.
No.
And because it's not fair on anyone.
No. All right. Quickly, let's give us an Is It Just Me? And then we'll any selections for the weekend that need to be made will be made. Mm. Have you got an Is It Just Me?
Is it just me or... I'll go back to Collingwood. I reckon Collingwood have got to bite the bullet and play Ben Reid forward. He's played there before. He played there as a kid. He came to Collingwood as a key forward. People forget that back in 2007 when he was drafted. 2013, he was very good there. His last 10 rounds, he was better up forward than Travis Cloak that year. It can happen. You bring Lyndon Dunn back in as a key defender. That's why they got him.
Yep.
Shade's been okay, in fairness.
Yep.
And just say, well, we're going to get the ball forward of centre more often than the opposition because of our midfield. Let's do it. Who else do you play up there to help Darcy Moore?
No, well, it's only Howe or Reid, really, isn't it?
And Howe's not that big. He's a third tall.
Yep.
Type player. And
never showed the ability to read the incoming ball.
Who takes a contested mark this year? It's been Levi Greenwood, I think, or Jesse White have taken two.
Yeah.
Inside the forward 50.
All right. Have you got one, Lauren?
Oh, you go.
Okay.
Go on.
I'll go. Give you a bit more time. is it just me or was this week's rule of the week play on by the umpires? Players were going back basically on a straight line, maybe moving an inch, and it was like, play on, play on. I was like, there's no doubt that was on the notes last week from the umpire. Anyway, just a little one.
Oh, is it just me? You mentioned him before, and Paddy McCartan. Do we just need to lay off a bit? He's still, 20 years old?
Yep.
A lot of pressure, obviously, given his draft pick situation, the position that they want him to be. It doesn't just happen overnight, and I think he's obviously had everything he's needed to deal with off the field. I think we just need to take a chill pill.
Paddy McCartan, last year, he had the concussions, obviously, and there were probably three of them. So at different times before that, he played some really good football where he looked the player you thought he was going to be. But he's never been a really tall player. He's 193, I reckon, Paddy McCartan. Some of these key forwards these days, a Tom Lynch or a Tom Hawkins, they're 196, 198, 200 centimetres. He's not there. He's a leading player a lot of the time. And, he's a really interesting one, Paddy McCartan. I would still... Beautiful player with the ball in his hands. But there's queries for sure.
Mm.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see his progress. That is for sure. Quickly through the games, Port Carlton. I'm heading over to Adelaide for that one.
Port, surely.
Yeah. I really like some of the kids that Carlton have unearthed. They're very young. I think it was 9 players, Dwayne mentioned in the commentary, eligible for Rising Star that played on the weekend.
Wow, that's What a stat.
In age. They may have played too many games, yeah, but they were basically in age, 21 or under.
Do they start getting tired?
Well, somewhere along the line, yeah, they will, and that other guys will get a chance. The Dogs and the Lions, you'd think the Dogs will get over
in,
that.
In Melbourne, yeah.
Suns and Crows.
They've got a rough chance, haven't they, at home? Suns?
Oh, I'm loving Adelaide at the moment.
No, okay. Sorry, forget I said that.
Oh, well, I said that they're unpredictable and it isn't Metricon, so. Yeah.
Nick Del Santo said yesterday that the grass is different at Metricon to every other stadium and the ball bounces differently.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a bit of insight, player insight for you. Sydney, I'm not sure if it helps anyone, but Sydney and GWS, we've talked about already. Can it be hard to see the Swans win that one? But argue me down if you think.
No, they can happen though
in those sort of rivalries.
Yeah, I don't think it will.
Freo and North, the Freo at home continue
North,
on.
North got a good chance.
Yeah, I think North.
Saints and Cats. Cats might lose a couple.
Yeah, and it could well be the Saints. I didn't like the look of the Saints Collingwood game. I didn't enjoy the spectacle. I must say it was a very poor standard game. Does Stephen play?
No.
Still not.
No, I think this week they said. So
I just got memories of Geelong playing St Kilda last year, and the player who beat us was Jack Stephen bursting out of the centre. I'll go Geelong just based on that.
Yeah, it's a good win by the Saints on the weekend. That's going right down to the wire for mine. I'll tip Geelong. Yeah, close one.
Geelong.
Hawks and Eagles.
This is pathetic when you're sort of embarrassed for side. Oh, Saints could win.
Well, it is at the MCG, and we saw Eagles go down there a couple of weeks ago. But no, I think Hawthorn's confidence is just.
How desperate
will
the Eagles be to prove that they can win?
So absolutely. Yeah. And they'd see this as a great sniff, wouldn't they?
I reckon it's the second match I'm looking forward to the most, but the most, other than Anzac Day, of course, is the Tigers and the D's.
Yeah, that's going to
be Monday night. It should be awesome. Yeah, I think Richmond, but it should be a belter.
I think Melbourne. They get Hogan back.
Yeah, they do.
I think Melbourne.
I'm really looking forward to another weekend of 5 days of footy. Finnegan,
how does your voice go?
Back to back.
You call 5 days in a row. Do you do anything for your voice?
Not really. It just depends. Radio takes more out of it than TV, just because you have to call more and go a bit harder. It depends on the game. And that's why in the last few, when I first started calling, it used to take a lot more out of my voice than now, because the game's changed and now I get a lot more of that play, you know, where there's dead time and they're chipping it around in the back line. And so it doesn't wear your voice out as much. But this year when it started, I had a few games and I thought, got to the end, I thought, geez, I'm struggling. I'm going to struggle to back up tomorrow. So as long as you don't get sick, if you get sick, you can be in a world of pain for 3 or 4 weeks as you're trying to get the voice over the line. But 5 will test me, I think.
So your health's actually a key issue.
It's a key. It's a key
issue. Well, it always is. But I mean,
tea and honey this weekend then?
Yeah, hopefully. Travel wears you down as well. I only got one travel this weekend. So a bit like Mickey Malthouse talking about people don't understand. Anyway, that's it for the Super Footy podcast for today. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes and give us reviews, send us love, whatever it is you've got to do to tell us that you listen. For all your AFL news, don't forget to follow @SuperFooty on Twitter and use the hashtag SFPod to get involved with comments or questions ahead of the next episode. We'll be back next week in just a late segment, My Mate Reckons. Well, I've just got one through from my mate Reckon. He reckons it's a much better pod without Nick. But unfortunately, he'll be back next week. We'll talk to you then.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.